This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour three rolling along this morning on a throwback Thursday. We're going 1974 as NC State topped UCLA in double overtime to win the NCAA championship and end the run of seven straight for John Wooden and the UCLA Bruins, the Wizard of Westwood. He always hated that nickname. Well, because he never really, he was very, very humble. John Wooden, I don't know if John Wooden could make it in a world like this where every coach is, you know, needing to go out there and sell themselves and NIL and whatnot. I'm not saying he would have opposed all that, but John Wooden was a very humble guy, really, really humble guy. I think there would have been an attractiveness if he was, you know, had a program that good in today's world. But I wonder, when we talk about Mike Krzyzewski and Roy Williams and Jay Wright and Jim Boeheim, all sort of leaving the game as it's trajecting in another way, I wonder if a John Wooden and a style of John Wooden could make it in the 2020s. Or is that more of a 60s, 70s kind of era kind of coach? But nevertheless, a legendary coach. But on this date in 1974, they lost in double overtime to NC State. David Thompson leading the Wolfpack to a championship. You know, I was thinking about this last night. Some of my favorite champions of the NCAA tournament, some of my favorite championship games. And yeah, having watched this thing from 84 on, you know, pretty much every year since 1984-ish, or probably even earlier than that. I do remember NC State winning it all, but I didn't fill out a bracket when I was a little kid or anything like that. But I do remember NC State winning it. But when Georgetown won in 84, and then of course 85, and then I was kind of full blown into it by then. But I was starting to think about some of my favorite championships, and some of the years you kind of forget who won, but then there's some of them that kind of stand out because they were really, really special runs to the tournament. I'll give you an example. Virginia winning in 2019 is only a great run to the championship where they beat Texas Tech because the year before they were the first one to lose to a 16. I think if Virginia had won that game without that, if they had beaten UMBC and maybe lost in the Sweet 16, I think 2019 isn't as memorable. I think the story of them rebounding after historic loss becomes part of the legacy of the 2019 championship. Likewise, Duke. I mean, the Duke Blue Devils beating Kansas in the finals in 1991, that's one story. But them beating an undefeated UNLV team prior to that makes that championship and their first under Mike Krzyzewski, that makes it even more special. Important. There's a level of importance to the championship game that the Final Four brought to that championship game. And then I remember 2003, and I remember Syracuse, and I remember the Orange beating Kansas, and Akeem Warwick with the block, and Carmelo Anthony, and Syracuse finally getting that championship for Jim Boeheim. And it goes to show you how really tough it is to win this tournament. If Alabama stumbles or Houston stumbles or any of these teams that are high seeded, UCLA, for example, or even a Gonzaga or a UConn, if they don't make it, it's really hard to hold those teams to a win or be done kind of mentality. It's, you know, I take championships or nothing in college basketball. And I know some fan bases do, but if Jim Boeheim could be at Syracuse for 47 years, and he can have players like Pearl Washington and Ronnie Cicely and Sherm Douglas and Derek Holman and Carmelo Anthony and Akeem Warwick. And the list goes on and on of the incredible talent, Jerry McNamara, that have worn the Syracuse uniform. And he could only get out one championship. It goes to show you how hard it is. Now, the one thing about Duke there's a couple of things about Duke that I think, when Mike Krzyzewski was done last year, that people really had to sort of sit back and appreciate, was that, like we talked about this with Mike Crispino at UConn. If you go through the list of teams in the Final Four, right, if you just Google Final Four teams and you get that sort of Excel sheet thing that shows you all the four teams, you will find Final Fours where you don't even remember Duke was in it. They lost in the semifinal game. Sometimes you don't even remember they lost the championship, right? I mean, that's how incredible his run was at Duke, how he could navigate that tournament and the pitfalls of that tournament better than any coach, right? I mean, if you think about it, we remember Scotty Thurman and we remember Corliss Williamson at Arkansas. We remember Nolan Richardson, 40 Minutes of Hell in Fayetteville, all of that. But you know who he beat in 94? He beat Duke. He beat Duke to win that championship. And that was a Duke team. That was a Duke team that had just saw the departure just a few years before of Bobby Hurley and Grant Hill and Christian Laettner and the dynastic run that they made from 88 to 92 with Laettner leading the way and those guys coming on and helping that dynasty to two championships, four straight Final Four appearances. Now, Hurley and Hill weren't part of that all four, but they certainly helped continue on what Laettner as a freshman was starting for Mike Krzyzewski back in 1988. In 1989, I should say, would have been the Final Four where they went to Seattle, and just a couple of years later, he's got them right back in it, right? He's got them right back in it, and they're playing for the national championship. And I think a lot of it was Arkansas was kind of the team to worry about. They were that good and that strong back in 1994, but then the next year, Arkansas gets to the finals again. And they lose to UCLA, right? I think that this, I said this yesterday, and it continues on. This is the hardest tournament to win, given the nature of it, because there is no tomorrow at any point, right? And you can be caught napping, and you can get exposed. You could be caught napping and lose to a Princeton, right? Where Princeton comes back late, and if you're Arizona, you're wondering what happened down the stretch. You can be like Purdue, be vulnerable, but not fairly Dickinson vulnerable, and yet you can find yourself going home. It's not the best way to determine a champion. There have been plenty of times where the NCAA champion was not the best team in college basketball, but it does not matter. That's how we determine it, right? It's that old sort of argument that we had for decades, which was college football was the best way to determine a champion because it was very elite. You had to be elite with a four-team playoff, and even before, it was like, we're just going 1 and 2. That's it. We're not messing around with lower teams down in 12 and 13 and 15. Nope, we're not even going to allow them the opportunity to be in some sort of tournament. And the NCAA tournament saying, oh, come on in. Come on in. Here's how you get in this thing, and we go from there, right? It's like the Masters. If you qualify for the Masters, you have a chance to win it just as anybody else can. You could be Trevor Immelman and win the Masters. You could be Tiger Woods and win it multiple times. But college football always went, no, nah, nah. And now it's kind of leaning in that direction where they went, yeah, maybe we should. Maybe we should go a little deeper. Maybe we should expand this thing so it includes more teams. But it's also difficult to win in that the pressure is always on and the atmosphere at every level gets ratcheted up and up and up. And one simple mistake could destroy it, could destroy your way. I mean, you think about some of the mistakes that have happened in the NCAA tournament. You think about Freddie Brown throwing the pass, right? The errant pass in the Georgetown, North Carolina finals. You think about Chris Webber in the corner in 1993 calling timeout, and there is no timeout. And North Carolina goes on to win that championship in New Orleans. Right, these were like really tough moments. Remember, think about 2016. Remember the Villanova North Carolina? It was in Houston. The Villanova North Carolina game. Like North Carolina comes down, hits a shot, and then Villanova comes right back, and Chris Jenkins knocks a three, and they win it. Right? I mean, these are moments that are embedded. You and I were talking about the Christian Laettner shot. Why has the Christian Laettner shot withstood every sort of quote-unquote assault on it with all sorts of new clips that you could use to replace it? Why has that shot endured for over 31 years now as the shot of the NCAA tournament? Why hasn't Jalen Suggs and his shot just a couple of years ago against UCLA, why hasn't that replaced the shot? Why hasn't Chris Jenkins' shot replaced it? Because I think that the Laettner shot is sort of an embodiment of Duke, Laettner, power team, moment, given the circumstance of the game. And I think there is a nostalgic feel to it. I don't know if Jalen Suggs' shot 20 years from now sort of becomes the thing.
But it doesn't have that same feeling.
Because
for me, with the Christian Laettner shot, is that he was the best player, like, hands down. Right. Like, it was, you know, there was no debate. Jalen Suggs, I mean, you know,
Chris Jenkins, right.
Yeah. You can make an argument whether or not they were the best player in the country. You know, and you'd probably find like 10 other people who were like, no, it was somebody else. Everyone, consensus was Christian Laettner.
Yeah, and I think for Laettner, and that was his junior year, mm-hmm. right? That was his senior year. For Laettner, that was, he had done it before. He had hit a shot against UConn before and made a buzzer beater in the tournament. But that circumstance was, everybody was anticipating a changing of the guard per se, not necessarily crowning Kentucky, but there was this presence in our lives every March, this Duke basketball team and this coach with a weird last name, right? And this player that was annoying if you didn't root for him, right? And you had most of the country dialed into this game going, they're going to lose. Kentucky is going to beat them. They're done. And he went, no, America, you hate me, and now you have even more reason to hate me. I'm going to hit the shot. Jalen Suggs doesn't have that against him. Chris Jenkins doesn't have that against him. All these guys that have hit buzzer beaters, they didn't have the emotional attachment that Laettner had with America. You either love Laettner because you rooted for him, or you couldn't stand him. There was no in between.
Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Well, 1974 on a throwback Thursday, NC State beating UCLA. Who's this?
I believe this is Carly Simon, and I'm trying to figure out who the other person is.
Carly Simon. Awesome.
I know it's Carly Simon.
I like Carly Simon. Pretty awesome.
And James Taylor. How can
James
I forget James Taylor?
Taylor? Okay. Is this why people think that You're So Vain is about James Taylor?
Maybe.
Because you worked with
him?
But
we know it's not about him.
It's about Warren Beatty. Warren Beatty was reportedly upset when people thought it wasn't about him.
Is that a little vain?
Yeah. Talk about being vain. Yeah, exactly. Right? Remember we talked about this song on another Throwback Thursday?
Yeah.
I think it's the only song in the history of music that ever used the word gavotte.
Okay.
So,
you know what this song always reminds me of? Is Dumb and Dumber.
I was going to say Dumb and Dumber. It was in a movie. Yeah, exactly.
Who
Dumb
needs
and Dumber.
A radio?
Right. Exactly. So it's 1974 on a Throwback Thursday. Dave Preston's going to join us in 15 minutes. He covers Big East basketball in the metro, D.C. metro area.
Have there been anything going on?
And there's been a lot. Yeah, jeez. So Ed Cooley left Providence to go to Georgetown, and then you had Rick Pitino heading to St. John's, and there was another move. The Fairleigh Dickinson coach, by the way, Mark Toppin,
yeah,
he's now at Iona.
Right.
So it's moving around. And then they've got another – there's another one that is up for the job at Providence that they just – I mean, it's quick. They're going to hire Kim English of George Mason is the guy that's going to Providence. So, geez, it's bouncing all over the place. So he's going to help us sort out Big East Conference coaching movement and the new – would Georgetown be – that's my question right out of the gate. Why is Georgetown today a better move for Ed Cooley than Providence? Am I missing something in the background? Did Cooley go there? Is Cooley attached there?
I don't think so.
It doesn't sound like a lateral move.
I think it's nostalgia, honestly.
You think he's clinging on to?
I think the name Georgetown.
Yeah, because Ed Cooley played at Stonehill. In the reason I know this, and I'll tell you why in a minute. In the late 80s to early 90s, and So he probably grew up knowing, like we did, Georgetown's presence and authority in the sport and how important they were. So he definitely was alive at the time where Georgetown was winning national titles and, you know, owning college basketball. But the only reason I know this, Dave texted me last night saying that he played. Dave and I, early in our careers, very early in our careers, like right out of college, were part of the New Hampshire College broadcast team for their basketball. And they had a great national Division II level basketball team. They went to a few Elite Eights and whatnot. So I was the in-studio guy, and Dave did color with our boss for the games. And we always talk about our time covering Penman basketball for New Hampshire College, now Southern New Hampshire College. And you may know about that because they run national ads for their online school.
Oh.
Yeah. Southern New Hampshire University. I got my online degree, blah, blah, blah. But that's the school we covered. And he said, oh, he played Stonehill. Stonehill played New Hampshire College. So he wanted to just remind me of that reference. But I'm trying to find the connection because it feels like Providence was a good basketball team this year. I kind of was like, it doesn't seem like the, I mean, money maybe? I don't know. I don't know. But you're right. It might be the Georgetown carries a large torch when they're good. And maybe that's the case.
I think it's the, you know, what Georgetown meant to basketball in the 80s.
Yeah, maybe so.
And, you know, and it's a larger than life name.
I mean, this Providence team went to the tournament, lost to Kentucky, and could have beaten Kentucky. People thought they could beat Kentucky. So Georgetown was like struggling to win conference games. So anyway, we'll have
Dave. So, I mean, is it a lateral move though?
I don't know. I think it's a decline move. But again, I'm good. That's why I want Dave to tell me in DC, how attractive is Georgetown? How attractive is still that job and what resources they have to get to where they want to be college basketball wise? Because yeah, you are dealing with a fan base a long time ago that had. And it wasn't just Patrick Ewing. I mean, they've had Allen Iverson on that school. They had Alonzo Mourning at that school. I mean, they've had some really good players over the years that have played at Georgetown. But they've been irrelevant for a while, and they all were irrelevant under Ewing, who got them to a tournament, I think, only one time in 6 years. So, you know, just John Thompson III, John Thompson's son, was a coach there and couldn't revitalize the program. So
yeah, I mean essentially they haven't really done anything since the mid 80s.
They were the late 90s, 2007
they had a team
in 2007
yeah, made it to the Final Four. That was it.
Oh yeah, that's right. I remember that. Sorry, yes, that's right. God, how did I forget that?
You know, a couple mid 90s Sweet 16 appearances, one Elite appearance in 96, but yeah, they really haven't done anything.
Yeah, Patrick Ewing's time there was not good.
Yeah.
Just not good. Struggling to win conference games is tough and whatnot. So, well, again, Preston, he'll be on in 10 minutes to help us with the Big East coaching shuffle. And the big one, of course, is Rick Pitino, who's just thrilled and tickled to death that he's now the head coach at St. John's. And he's actually coaching in the city rather than 15 miles. It's like when people say, it's like, imagine if you lived, like, I live in Nashville. I tell people when I go on vacation and when people say, where do you live? I go, Nashville. I don't really live in Nashville. I live like 25 miles from Nashville.
Yeah.
Right. Like I never go to Nashville. I don't work in Nashville. My wife and I hardly ever go there. And so, but just for simplicity, people go, where do you live? I go, Nashville.
Yeah.
Right. People think it's in my backyard. It isn't.
Can you tell where your town ends and where Nashville begins? Is there like a good separation or?
If you look at a map, you'll find it south on I-65, pretty steep.
But there's no businesses that Nashville proper hasn't bled into your town.
Yeah, kind of. I guess it has. I guess it has.
Like here, I mean, you know, I live in Katy, which is a suburb of Houston.
Right.
But you can't really tell where Katy begins and Houston ends, or vice versa.
Right.
It's just like there's an imaginary line somewhere that here's where Katy extends to.
So, Rick Pitino, if you say Iona's in New York City, people are like, well,
not really.
It's not like it's in Brooklyn, right? And it's like, so Pitino, where's Iona? New York City. Manhattan? Well, not really. It's like 15 miles outside of the city. Oh, okay. Well, it's not really in the city then, is it? Okay, that's a technicality, but now he gets to say he's in the city. Now he gets to say, yeah, St. John's is in the city. So We'll talk to him about Patino's back in a major Power Six conference.
I'm having issues with him there because I can't see him bringing that program back to prominence.
Well, okay, I will say.
I hate saying this, but given his age.
Yeah, he's 70. He is 70. And I think you're right. All right, does he want to coach when he's 80? I mean, seriously.
What's the time frame of really getting a program back on its feet?
Yeah, it's going to take a couple of years.
Yeah. Right?
But in this day and age, I mean, we're talking about two players. Look at two players that are in the tournament right now. Marquise Noel of Kansas State. He's 5'8", guard. He's delivering for Kansas State, right? Last year, he's playing for Little Rock, okay? And then Norchad Omir, who is playing for Miami. Last year, he played for Arkansas State. All right, so you can, if you're attractive enough that you can get top players to, boom, come over quickly, then you can do it. You can do it. But how much pizzazz does Rick Pitino still have? I think Rick Pitino is capable of recruiting New York City kids to play at St. John's now. Really keep them at St. John's. I think when Rick Pitino walks in to a New York City kid's house, apartment, wherever, he can sell them his New Yorkishness, if that's a term, to that student athlete. He can do that. He can say, you know what? I got a chance to coach at the Garden when I was coaching Nick. Now I'm coaching at the Garden for St. John. You've always wanted to play at the Garden. Play at the Garden with me. With me. Right? You and I at the Garden. No other place can sell you the Garden, but I can sell you the Garden. The kid's like, yeah, you're right. Think about all the times you're out there playing with your friends. What'd you dream of? What'd you dream of? You dream of playing in Fog Allen Fieldhouse in Lawrence, Kansas? Can't get good pizza in Lawrence, Kansas. But the Garden, the lights of the Garden, I'm going to be there. You could be there too. Kid will sign on the dotted line tomorrow, right? What does that mean? I got no idea. I don't know. I don't know what that'll mean for St. John's down the line. But I know he can sell New York to New York kids because a lot of them are looking at UConn, Providence, Syracuse, places like that, but they don't have the Garden. Like we talked about with Jim Boeheim when Dave Preston came aboard and he said Jim Boeheim couldn't sell the Garden because he wasn't going there. And the Big East goes there. So we'll talk to Dave Preston coming up next. Wake up. Ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka. I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Throwback Thursday, 1974, and we are talking at NC State beating UCLA in double overtime to end the Bruins' 7-straight championship run. Again, keeping it with the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack, is that what we're doing for most of these?
It's weird, but yeah.
Before we get to our progressive guest line, real quick, Guardians of the Galaxy was one of those movies that when I saw the trailer for it, I had no interest seeing it. And when I did finally see it, I was glad I saw it. It was better than I really deserved.
I'm 100% with you because I don't remember.
I didn't even know anything about that.
I was going to say the same thing. I don't remember them in comic book lore.
Right. And then I went, well, I'm not going to see this. This looks like trash. But then it was one of the better movie experiences.
But when I did see it, I was like, wow, this thing's fantastic. It has really everything. Good.
Progressive guest line, drivers are switch and save with Progressive, save nearly $700 on average. So we talk about some coaching movements, especially in the Big East. Ed Cooley announces the head coach at Georgetown. Then Rick Pitino is going to St. John's. Dave Preston joins us. George Mason's coach, Kim English, is expected to take the job at Providence. So Dave's going to help us sort this all out from WTOP. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. It's like Adam Smith's invisible hand. Providence gives its coach to Georgetown and then takes George Mason's head right. coach. I think they even maybe saved on the flight. I don't know.
All right. Give me some inside information on Georgetown, the 2023 version of this. I want to say organization, but I want to say school. I want to say basketball program. Is Ed Cooley making a lateral move, a decline move, an upward move? What is the attraction to him personally to the Georgetown job today?
it's the nation's capital. And Providence, even though it's a wonderful city, it's still Providence, Rhode Island. No offense, but it's not a major league city. There are no major league franchises there. It's not the hub of the world that Washington, D.C. is. Ed Cooley's daughter is a senior at Georgetown. She's graduating this spring. She's going to stay in the area. It gives him and his family a chance to stay near her. It's always, when you get to a certain age, it's always nicer to be closer to family rather than further away. I think he had done everything he could with the apparatus, with everything that's in place in Providence. It's not an easy school to win at, and it's a school that's been just successful enough over the years. Rick Pitino's Final Four in 1987. There was a 1973 final run with Marvin Bad News Barnes and Hall of Fame coach Dave Gavitt. So the school's just successful enough that people think that you should be successful, not regardless of current landscape in college athletics. And it's not a football school, so you don't have football money funding your athletic department. It's not an easy place to win. And he averaged 20 wins a season there. He won the Big East regular season, won the tournament during his span there. And I think Ed Cooley had kind of done everything he could there, and this presents an incredible challenge for him. Because if he resurrects the Hoyas, oh my goodness, we're talking Hall of Fame candidate.
Yeah, because the Hoyas, I mean, we were just kind of looking up their resume. We're reminded of a Final Four run they made in 2007. But other than that, struggling to win conference games under Patrick Ewing. I mean, you can switch this stuff overnight with the transfer portal and boom, you could have players in the door the next day. But what are the challenges that he's facing at Georgetown?
Tony faces the challenge of not having an on-campus arena. The biggest mistake Georgetown did back in the 80s was they had an old gym. It's still there, McDonough Gymnasium. And could play games at the Cap Center, especially with Patrick Ewing, and especially with the top flight program they were in the 80s. But instead of what they could have done was, and they're all could have been, and they mean for nothing now. But what they should have done was turn McDonough into a Cameron Indoor North, where it would have been a 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 band box, tough to get a ticket, and it would have been absolutely electric on campus. Instead, they play games at Capital One Arena, where when they sell it out, it's good, but 10,000 people in a 20,000 seat arena, it doesn't feel good, and they've struggled to draw 5,000. The last couple of years, Tony. When John Thompson III, his final season, one of my write-ups on WTOP.com about the move, I wrote that 5,600 people showed up for Georgetown St. John's. Now, they'd love to get 5,600 people for Georgetown St. John's in 2023. Program has not been competitive the last couple of years. A lot of it has been that, it's a shame that Patrick Ewing made his coaching career in the pros and then tried to become a college coach, because I think if he had been a college assistant before being a head coach, he would have been much better suited for the job. But that is, as they said in the movie Margin Call, that is spilled milk under the bridge, and they got to move on.
All right, let's talk about – go ahead.
No, and I think Ed Cooley's the guy to do it. He is a salesman. Granted, it's tough to lose a press conference unless you're Jim Zorn and say maroon and black are the team's colors. But he came in, he sold his vision for the program. Granted, there are a lot of alums, a lot of students there, so the press conference was a semi pep rally. But he got that room pretty excited about the future and the present for Georgetown men's basketball.
I want to go up the road a bit, if you don't mind. And I wasn't surprised by this. I was always waiting where he was going to go. He wasn't going to stay at Iona very long. And that's Rick Pitino at St. John's. Again, not surprising, but it's 70 years old. Does Rick want to do this for the next 10 years? I mean, what's your thought process on that one?
I think he knows no other life. than this. And that's, yeah. that's why, you know, Jim Boeheim, that's why he coached into his late 70s. These guys, they don't, they get into a certain rut. It's like, it's like the, it's akin to the bartender who's going part-time, you know, in college. And all of a sudden you get into that groove where it's like, you know what? This is what I know how to do. I don't know how to be a 9-to-5 guy. I don't know how to relax. These guys, they, as much as they hate a lot of the junk that they have to go through with, you know, alumni, with boosters, with, you know, administrators, you know, with dealing with players and players' parents, they know how to deal with it. And it's something that they've got the muscle memory where they can do it. And it gives them the juice of being in the game. And so I'm not surprised that he's still coaching, because even though he's 70, 70 now is not what 70 was 10 years ago or even 30, you know, or even 5 years ago. I mean, he seems to be in great shape, and you can massage a coaching staff to, you know, have a lot of the other guys do a lot of the things that you don't want to do. So I'm not surprised that he's back, and St. John's is the spot that, you know, I thought that he'd, you know, eventually wind up, because, you know, he is Madison Square Garden. He is the Big East. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him take another job after this, knowing Rick Pitino, though.
Oh, I was just thinking about that, too. It's like, St. John's is the Garden. It's New York. He loves New York. He loves being a New Yorker. I get all that. But you're right. It would not be surprised. It's 73. 3 years later, he goes, all right, what else is out there? What other program even higher than this? Can I be on the sideline back in my Armani suits?
Can I go back to Kentucky again?
Yeah, do I go back to Kentucky? Do they welcome me and Joanne back one more time? Is that what happens? Yeah, because he has a way of attracting the spotlight, man. I know some of it's negative, of course, but some of it, no, I mean, seriously, he really is that kind of coach that when the bright lights are on, he wants to be under them. There's no question about it.
And you could make the case that there's no better game coach.
Than
Rick Pitino. You know, it's the classic old Bum Phillips quote where he said about Don Shula, you know, he can take his'n and beat yourn, and yourn and beat his'n. You know, even though it sounds better when you're wearing a cowboy hat and looking like Bum Phillips, but that's Rick Pitino. He's been able to win with a style that's exciting, and he's been able to win on the biggest stage multiple times, whether it was at Kentucky with those teams that we saw there with the Wildcats in the mid 90s were just some of the most talented teams that you saw of that era. He won with Delray Brooks, a cast off from Indiana, you know, jacking up threes, for Providence. They beat Georgetown when Georgetown was at the peak of their powers to get to the Final Four in 1987. He won at Louisville. He basically has won everywhere, but when he was with the Boston Celtics.
You think about that 87 Final Four, and you're looking at Jerry Tarkanian, Jim Boeheim, Bobby Knight, and what, a 34-year-old Rick Pitino with an exciting young team? Like, that's an incredible array of coaching talent there, and he's right there amongst the giants of the game.
And you know what's amazing? We talk about how Georgetown hasn't been to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament in 16 years, 2007. You know, current success is no guarantee of what happens in the future. Because 1987, Indiana wins its third national championship under Knight. They haven't won one since. They've been to one Final Four since, and that was because of a missed Jay Williams free throw. You look at
Dave. You know, great stuff, man. I appreciate it. Got to run.
We've got your tournament coverage right here on the Sports Map Radio Network, presented by HelloFresh. This spring, HelloFresh is delivering great-tasting recipes that help you stick to your food goals, like new dietitian win options that are under 700 calories. Go to HelloFresh.com/Hoops60 and use promo code Hoops60 to get 60% off plus free shipping. HelloFresh.com/Hoops60 and use promo code HOOPS60. Now, back to the show.
Oh, these flavors and these dishes from HelloFresh are outstanding. Three of them are in the books. I've got another package coming on Friday. My family is loving the ease and the convenience of making restaurant-quality meals. And you can, too. Go to HelloFresh.com/Hoops60. You can save 60% off your and free shipping with that code Hoops60 at HelloFresh.com. There are a number of different options for you to choose from. So you can go dietitian win options, under 700 calories, making it easier to stay on your weight loss goals. You can do protein smart recipes, one pot pork and chili, creamy Dijon dill chicken. They have a whole bunch of different options for you to choose from to make sure you're getting the right things for your family. And of course, if you have sort of allergies and whatnot, you can get the right dishes for you. And one of the things I love about them is, one, they're very tasty and delicious. And two, I wouldn't be able to make any of these at home if my life depended on it. I have no clue how to make some of these things. And some of these dishes, they're just mouthwatering. For example, Dijon chicken with Dijon mustard. And it's sort of an onion. It was like onion straws that we put on top and baked it. Maybe I could have figured that out. But the fact that I had a recipe right in front of me, laid out that Dijon mustard on top of that chicken, crumbled up that, got that Monterey Jack cheese on it with the onion straws, just baked it. When it came out, smelled delicious. The roasted green beans, the lemony rice that went with our pork tenderloin dish. All of this is outstanding. Now, you can try these for yourself. Again, go to HelloFresh.com/Hoops60. That's HelloFresh.com/Hoops60. Get 60% off plus free shipping with that code. It's America's number one meal kit. It is for a reason, because the meals are easy to follow and they are delicious to eat. HelloFresh.com/Hoops60. All right, continuing on a Throwback Thursday. By the way, that was Piano Man, 1974, on the Throwback Thursday. I know most of Billy Joel's big hits came during the 1970s, but I didn't know it was 74. That's pretty great.
I didn't either.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, got a little bit of another little... This is another story. I was a young kid trying to impress a girl in school, and she loved Piano Man. Yeah, right.
That this is you.
This is you. I can't play an instrument. I wrote down all the lyrics to Piano Man because she liked the song, but I had the cassette, and I knew I copied it for her. Stupid young man trying to impress young girls. Well, we all have those stories, no, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Exactly. But she still remembers that to this day, by the way. So we're still good friends today, and she remembers. Remember when you wrote all the lyrics to Piano Man for me when we were in, like, 10th grade? And I went, nah, I don't remember that.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember doing that. No, I don't remember doing that. That was not me.
I was pumping iron back then,
yeah,
babe.
Exactly. I must have been doing something else to try to impress you.
You're confusing me. I was in the middle of my sit-ups.
Completely different. No, that was not me. That was the same girl. Remember I told you I gave her the Valentine's Rose with the Rick Ashley lyrics on it? I was a sucker back then.
Wow.
That's
back in the time, like for me, I remember it was like late 80s, early 90s, where I would make a cassette tape for a girl.
Sure, why not, right? Exactly.
I was like, here's a list of songs that make me think of you.
You know how long it took me to write out the lyrics to Piano Man, by the way? Like hand wrote?
Yeah.
On a piece.
I believe it.
Goodness gracious, what am I, stupid? So I took typing for a reason. I didn't want to do that anymore. By the way, typing, best class I ever took in my life. All the classes that I took,
typing
was the best.
Typing
was the best.
A class they no longer offer.
No, they don't offer that. And it's too bad, too, because
you're just born knowing how to do it now.
No,
that's basically how it is.
You know what's crazy? My son will see me type a script, or I'll type out my sports stuff, and I'm like, I make mistakes. I get kidded for making a few mistakes, but I go backspace, and he'll go, Dad, you can really type. And he goes, I just have to hunt and peck. I go, if I had to type what I have to type on a daily basis with hunt and peck, I'd quit. I'd find another job. I'd find another career. Are you kidding me? That would drive me nuts. But you know what? Here's the thing. I took typing in high school because I wanted to be a journalist, right? So I knew I had to type. But this is not a sexist thing. There were only girls in the typing class. There weren't any boys in the typing class.
Yeah, but looking back on it, that's probably a smart thing for you to do,
too. I knew I wanted to get in this business since I was 8 years old. I had people, the right people, say, I remember guidance counselor saying, you take typing. Because you got to know to type. You want to be a journalist, you got to know how to type. So I'm taking typing. None of my friends are in that class. Now, this is before computers, like, were you know, going to be the big thing. Like, none of my friends thought that they would be using a typewriter for their job. I did. That's what I wanted to do. So I took typing. It's a bunch of girls in the class. And I'm one of the only few guys taking typing, going, H, 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 Y, Y, H, Y. Like, just learning finger memorization to make sure I can type it on the fly. But the best class I ever took, was that. Because I took woodworking, but I don't have a wood shop in my backyard. Yep. I can't make a swing. Like, I can't make a table. Like, I don't have that equipment in my house.
I also took, like, a metal shop class.
Yeah, I took metal shop. I made a dustpan.
Nice. Yeah, I don't even know what I made.
And we made dustpans. That's what we did, riveted it together. And if the teacher liked you, if our teacher, Mr. Gaskell, if he liked you, he would let you use the arc welder. But it was petrifying because he said, if you use the arc welder and you look directly into the light, he goes, it'll feel like somebody dumped a bucket of sand in your eye and grinding it with their thumb.
Hmm.
That's very descriptive. And I have no idea why I gave Mr. Gaskell a Southern accent. I grew up in New Hampshire, and he had a New England accent. But it's just what I do these days. Yeah, he was.
Sounds like more like a Southern thing to say than a New Englander.
Exactly.
England,
but nevertheless, I'm betting
his grandpappy was Southern.
Yeah, maybe he was. I have no metal shop in my garage. But
you don't?
I don't. But I know how to type. I can type very well.
No, I took a typing class, and then I've forgotten how to type. I pretty much, like, I'm a hybrid because I can type pretty good with one hand, but the other hand is more hunt and peck.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know what you would call that.
I don't know how to do the numbers. I'm not good with numbers. I have to look at the pad to do the numbers, but I can type pretty quickly. But my wife always teases me because she'll go, hey, she goes, you make a lot of mistakes. I go, do I? She goes, yeah, I'm sitting over here listening to you type, and it's backspace, back. I go, yeah, I'm not the most efficient. Like, I would do well on speed, but I wouldn't do well on getting words correct.
Well, that's the thing now, too. It's like, you know, for both of my boys, I don't think they'll ever really know how to spell.
Yeah, I know. Remember
two.
That?
And probably my younger one, too. Because, you know, now they'll jump on their computer, and it's like spell check is there.
Yeah.
Texting, and it'll almost already autocorrect the words that they were wanting. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, no. I remember telling a teacher, an English teacher once, I said, I don't know how to spell. I'm never going to learn how to spell. And she went, you can learn how to spell. Like, she didn't take that, like, that feel sorry for me crap. She goes, you can learn to spell. I go, all right.
You know what's
funny? I'm just lazy.
So
I'm sorry. I tried to trick you.
My son last week, it was during spring break, got his permit. Right.
Right.
His driver's permit, which, you know, is fun. It's exciting. It's the next stage in his life. But when he was at the office, the DMV lady, the lady behind the counter, said, you got to sign your name. And he sat there and looked at her and was like, what? What do you mean, sign my name?
Yeah, they don't even do
and
that.
And so he just wrote his first name. And she's like, sweetie, I need both names. And he's like, you mean what?
Like a signature.
Yeah.
Not practicing his autograph?
No, he's not practicing his autograph. Sure. I told him, I said, you should start practicing your autograph now. Because now he looks at it and goes, how do I sign my name? I mean, it looks very childish right now.
No.
Because, they don't do cursive.
That's true.
Cool.
That's true. So, anyway, good show today with our guest Bob Holt and Dave Preston. Good conversation about Big East basketball. So I'm pretty... To me, I am looking forward to seeing what Rick Pitino goes next, because I don't know if St. John's is the final stop. I'm kind of with him. Hey, guys, it's all about confidence, and confidence knowing that you'll be ready to go when your partner is, and knowing that you'll be able to go the extra rounds when needed. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. It's in a chewable form, so if you don't like swallowing pills, this is for you. And Importantly here, it's at a fraction of the cost. It's an online prescription service, so you don't have no visits to the doctor's office and not having some awkward conversations. You don't have to wait in the line in the pharmacy, and it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, and their tablets are made in the USA. Blue Chew is giving you a free promo code MADNESS. You just got to pay $5 shipping. That is BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Enjoy the games tonight.